We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me as always over there in beautiful New York City, my man, the one, the only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I am so good. I am so, so, so good. And excited to be doing previews, Tyler.
Oh, God, it feels so good.
Maybe it's just the hydration talking.
You've really been steering into hydration speak on our Twitter account. By the way, if you're new to the show, we do have a Twitter account at Solid Verbal. We do have a Facebook page, facebook.com/Solid Verbal. We're also on Instagram. And if you're really into the show or just checking it out and want to know what other Verballers are like, you can go to reddit.com/r/solidverbal. We didn't start it. It was started by some super verballers, among which is our good friend Peter. Mm-hmm. He runs the sub, and folks are out there talking about each and every show that we do. Also, before we go too much further and steer too much into the ACC 2019 season, Dan, our first preview for the coming year.
Hell yeah.
If you haven't already, the weekend of August the 17th and 18th, we will first be starting our Solid Verbal World Tour in the great city of Dallas, Texas, or a little bit north, I should say, to be
the
particular.
The DFW area, yeah.
The DFW area. SolidVerbalTickets.com/Texas is where you can buy tickets to the Fantasy Things draft that we're going to do on August the 17th at Alamo Draft House, 8 p.m. Central Time. Be there, be square. Then, the very next morning, August the 18th, hopping on the bird, flying back across country to the nation's capital, doing our Fantasy Things draft show at the wonderful Union Stage.
Hell yeah. DC.
That show at 7:30, solidverbaltickets.com/DC. Get in on the ticket game if you haven't already. If you have, if you've got social media, please do blast it out to all your friends. The more the merrier. We want to know who's coming to the show. We want to celebrate your purchase with you because we're excited about both shows. Still tickets available in both spots. They are drying up quickly. I would urge each and every one of you verballers out there who are interested, please do hop on in before it's too late.
It's going to be excellent. We can't wait to meet you and eat tenders and talk about college football stupidity with all of you.
Speaking of college football stupidity, Dan, we have made it officially. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
We have made it through the long, cold offseason of college football.
Yes.
The summer is in the rearview mirror, at least in a college football sense, because starting today, right here, right now, we are launching our 2019 preview series. We're starting with the ACC. And as longtime listeners will know, over the course of time, we've evolved this format a number of times. We've gone through by a division, by a team. Mm-hmm. Today, we're just going to simplify this, yo. We're going to do all of the ACC one episode. Might run a little bit longer than you and I are accustomed to, but that's okay. We want to make sure that we have a self-contained ACC show for any and all who are interested. We've put an extraordinary amount of research into this. And I think we're excited about the next couple shows where we actually get to talk about some on-field stuff.
Yes, totally and completely true. The ACC kicks things off for us because it is America's Championship Conference. Am I correct?
That is the correct acronym.
It is America's, yes. That's what it stands for, America's Championship Conference. So our format is, we're doing the entire conference. We've decided to split things up divisionally, and we are going to ask each other questions that we have about our own or the other person's division of quote-unquote expertise.
That is correct.
So these are our burning questions to each other, sort of like we had with the Q&A, where we came up with our own Q's and A's, and we're using that to discuss America's Championship Conference.
I have not written out, at least not yet, a full-on role-playing series for the ACC or really any conference, but I'm not ruling it out because, as you know, these preview episodes sometimes take a bit of a left turn. I don't want to rule that out.
Playing ACC game, like a Dazio's dungeon. So roll the dice.
The way that we've broken this up, you're going to ask me questions about the ACC Coastal, or as we know it here and love it here, the ACC Postal.
Everybody's 4-4.
I am going to ask you questions about the ACC Atlantic or the so-called ACC Fatlantic.
Yep. This is true.
And I believe we're just going to go back and
forth. Thanks to Christian Wilkins. Yeah. I was going to say thanks to Christian Wilkins. There's something beautiful about the Fatlantic.
So, Dan, I guess we're a little bit undecided on what sounds we would like to use to lead into all this great information here. Could go breaking news. Could go picks of the week. Could go lightning round. Shootout. Murdered. What are you feeling?
Just do what anybody new to playing Street Fighter 2 would do and just mash those buttons on your soundboard.
That actually came out okay. I'm not
going to
lie.
That's not bad. And there is a Patriot League tie-in, and we'll get to it.
That's true.
That's
wow.
Pretty good. That's, I mean, you could put the hypothetical one just because it's a question-y sound, but I don't know if you have that loaded up.
I will find it before the end
put
of the
it
show.
In post. Put go. It in post.
So, Daniel, I want to start by asking you a very important question.
Are we going back and forth, or are we going division and then the other division?
We're just going to see where the show takes us, Dan.
Let's do it. Let's get in the gondola of information.
I want to talk about Clemson.
Okay.
Perhaps a bit of a cliche start to this show, but...
I refuse. Okay.
Fine. Here's what I want to know about Clemson.
Yeah.
I want to know, with all of their turnover on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We can talk
all three levels.
All three levels.
Yeah.
Does that to you, as the newfound expert on the ACC Fatlantic, does that represent any kind of significant step backwards in terms of production, in terms of expectations? What does it mean for the 2019 rendition of the Clemson Tigers?
Define significant.
I would define significant.
What does government mean to you?
No. What I would mean by significant is, does it mean we're going to see, I don't know, a 20-point or a 20-place drop in their S&P Plus defensive rating? Is their defense going to get noticeably worse now that we're going to have so many new faces playing on that side of the ball?
So are they going to fall down to merely really, really good, or fall to excellent instead of they are all assassins and never blink?
Instead of being the number two defense, are they now going to be number 22? Something like
okay.
that. Okay. Which is still very good, but...
Short answer is they won't fall that far, I don't believe. No. The short answer is no. The losses up front are significant, and I think it will change how they play defense a little bit. Perhaps they bring more pressure because they can't count on Cleland Furl, I forget how you pronounce that officially, but and Austin Bryant off the edge, and then, you know, everything Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence did in the middle. So they're not going to be able to trot out a team within a team in the way that they've been able to do these past couple of years. But Clemson's participation levels and rates on their defense, especially, it's through the roof. They get in so many guys, both when the game is on the line and not, because they happen to blow out a number of teams. So they get a number of people on the field. So whether it's, I think there's two Xaviers, but Xavier Thomas is the big one. And then whether it's Justin Foster, whether it's, you know, Darian Kendrick, who's now switching from receiver to corner, like throughout the defense, they're working in guys who either have a ton of promise or have played a ton for this defense. So I think the big difference will be how much they trust the defensive line to do things alone. But results-wise, against the offenses they're going to be facing, at least after Texas A&M, and technically before Texas A&M with Georgia Tech, there will be a drop-off, but nothing noticeable to the eye. It'll be like a magic eye drop-off where you're really going to have... You're really good at those, right?
I'm very good at those, yeah.
You're going to have to squint. You're going to have to dive deep situationally. There's just too much talent. There's too much continuity with the coaching staff. And we've seen this before with Clemson. We're going into the season, we're like, they lost 10 of 11 start. And like, just as good. Because so much of defense is effort and confidence going both ways. Players being confident in the defensive staff and the defensive staff being confident in letting their own players loose and trusting them to execute a game plan. So with who they're facing, with how they've recruited, you know, they bring in the number one, two, three defensive linemen, whatever, each and every year. It's great that Isaiah Simmons is coming back behind the line, their leading tackler last year, even with a couple of losses at linebacker behind him. The secondary is mostly intact. If you remember the pick six against Bama with AJ Terrell, there's a lot. There's a lot there.
Yeah, and I mean,
so look, I don't see any sort of, whoa, what happened kind of drop off.
Yeah, and look, it was sort of a rhetorical question. I think everyone who listens to this show
totally fair
knows the answer already, but it's a question that frankly needs to be asked. This is a team that went 15-0 last year. Of course, they won the national championship, beat Notre Dame in the playoff, beat Alabama in very convincing fashion in that championship game, and now they bring back a lot on the offensive side of the ball. We talk here about defense, and I'll go back to that in a second, but so many key contributors are coming back on the offensive side of the ball, not to mention Trevor Lawrence, potentially a Heisman front runner. He and Tua Tagovailoa potentially duking it out for the Heisman. They are the odds-on favorite, at least at this early juncture in the preseason. Also got Travis Etienne, maybe the best running back in college football. T. Higgins, Justin Ross, they're back. Amari Rodgers got hurt, maybe back later in the year, but still has eligibility. So
huge.
The point here is that so much of that potential in offense is coming back that at least to some degree, looking at the schedule, it will definitely balance out any rough spots we'll have in the beginning with the defense. But look, replacing four guys on that incredible defensive line, their top three linebackers, five of their top six tacklers as a whole, there's going to be a bit of an adjustment. I like that you bring up the fact that Brent Venables is so good at working in a rotation. That's part of his brilliance. As a defensive coordinator, it's played a huge role in building depth, in building this sustained success that we've seen now under Dabo Swinney and Brent Venables at Clemson. So I think Clemson's in a great spot. The schedule's favorable. I don't know if you looked at the schedule at all.
And I have an order of threats that I'm curious your opinion about.
So the three games that jump out to me, you got Texas A&M in week two. You've also got a road game at South Carolina on November 30th. The one that I'm most intrigued by, I don't know if it's the biggest threat, but the one that I'm most intrigued by is actually in week three. It's the week after that A&M game. Everyone's going to be amped up for A&M at home. But then the very next week, Clemson on the road at Syracuse. Should be a pretty good Syracuse team. And I don't know if it's going to be a letdown spot there, but at least at this juncture in late July, there's some potential there, Dan.
Yeah, hard to believe that there's going to be a letdown against a team they almost lost to last year and did lose to the year before. I think they're going to be ready. This is not a championship caliber team. This is a championship team. So my order is Texas A&M, Syracuse, South Carolina, though I think South Carolina is better than Syracuse. I think situationally Syracuse is in a better spot to win that game. And then at the end, just in terms of potential, Florida State, but that's pretty far after. So that's my order of threats, because there's not much you can point to on offense. Mitch Hyatt's gone, but they've recruited the line really, really well. And the second half is pretty much cake until South Carolina. And I believe both Florida State and Clemson have byes before that game. So the Florida State threat is pretty, pretty microscopic. So that's where I'm at. At worst, they go 11-1.
I agree. You look across the board at all of the positional groups, probably the best quarterback. I think he's the best quarterback in the league. Best running back, best wide receiving core, best line, best defensive line. Maybe in the top two, if you want to go that far, at linebacker, at defensive back.
I don't fully know that this is the best defensive line in the conference.
Oh, I think it's up there.
I mean, it's certainly up there. I can't name them right now when none of them have really played significant snaps yet.
It's either them or Miami.
Yeah.
It's one or the other.
I think Syracuse has a couple really good ends.
Syracuse is good. We'll get to Syracuse.
There's a couple of conversations to be
had. The point is, Clemson's still very good, still your odds-on favorite.
For sure.
To win their side of the conference and probably the conference as a whole.
No, not probably. Full-on favorite.
They are the favorite.
Yeah. Where would you like to go next? Do you want me to ask you a question? Do you want to stick with the Fat Atlantic?
No, ask me a question. Let's go postal here.
Let's start with what I believe to be not the most important, but maybe the most interesting team in the postal, Georgia Tech.
Ah.
Because this is, as you know, because you own a hat.
I do.
An Orange Bowl caliber program.
I do.
Yeah. So, Jeff Collins takes over for Paul Johnson, meaning the option done with in Atlanta. Atlanta. Is there reason to believe Georgia Tech's offense, because I think the defense still has a long way to go as well, but won't look like a group of newborn giraffes coming together to play an organized sport as they go dramatically away, or at least a little bit at a time away from that flex bone?
Yeah. So it's been interesting because when Paul Johnson stepped down, he himself was talking to a similar point. And his spin at the time was, hey, these kids are still football players. Like, they didn't play this system that we just ran when they were in fifth grade. They were recruited to a system, but they're still really good football players. And the larger implication that he was driving towards was they can play in any system, right?
Can somebody throw the ball forward?
Can somebody throw the ball forward, right?
Yeah.
And you know, these things, they all sound fine. And they're very inspirational. And of course, that's the kind of thing he's going to say. But at some point, Dan, at some point, the rubber meets the road. And that's when you get the real transition, which is essentially what you're asking about here. How is this personnel going to adapt to Dave Patnode's system on offense? Because he wants to achieve more balance. He's not going to run that option. The truth is, Dan, we've got quarterbacks recruited to an entirely different system. We've got inexperienced wideouts. We've got an offensive line that frankly is used to blocking for the run and not so much the pass. The vision that I keep having in my head is, remember when Dennis Northcutt was playing quarterback for the Cleveland Browns for that brief moment in time?
Very vaguely.
And it wasn't all that successful because Dennis Northcutt was wide receiver.
Right.
But damn if it wasn't interesting.
Yeah.
Damn if it wasn't at least exciting enough to keep you interested to watch to see what was going to happen with the Browns on offense. They don't win
We've all rooted for teams that have put somebody under center or in the shotgun where we've thought, I don't know if this guy's the guy. He looks like a left fielder coming into the mound.
Right.
What's happening?
Just like a lot of wildcat concepts that maybe somebody could throw it. And if they do, we'd be interested in seeing what happens there.
I still remember the Chris Harper era at Oregon very well.
Sure. I feel that way about this version, this 2019 version of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. It's going to be a transition. It's probably going to be ugly.
Okay.
So on offense, I guess the answer to your question is that to some degree, yes, it's going to be a flaming bag of you know what.
Mm-hmm.
But look, there are questions on defense along the line as well, and they're young. But it should be a pretty okay defense. Jeff Collins knows how to coach at least that side of the ball. There are pieces there. They're going to hold their own. That's right. A bright spot. I don't want to focus on the negative so much, but I think defense is a bright spot. I like what Jeff Collins has done. He's a guy who was born in Georgia. He's had two stops at Georgia Tech. He has really steered into the fact that Georgia Tech is in Atlanta. He's gone full on Atlanta with the branding of this Georgia Tech.
I think they do Waffle House Wednesdays, like on the video series on their website.
Waffle,
like that.
Yeah, he's doing that. He's tweeting about Big Boy, right? Like he's fully indoctrinated into Atlanta, and I think that's a smart move to try and just brand this program a little bit differently. There are still going to be weird things. Like he said Tech's not going to have a depth chart. Instead, they're going to have something that he's calling the quote-unquote line, which is, quote, a measuring stick that will judge whether players are ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
A little too like New Age Herm Edwards for my liking.
Right.
But hey, he's trying to start something new. The schedule certainly is not doing them any favors. I don't know if you got that up, but it's not.
It's
not doing them any favors. They open at Clemson week one. Home against Georgia last week of the year. Tough bookend there. But the answer to your question, very long-windedly, is it's going to be weird, but it could be fun, and there are some bright spots, and I really like Jeff Collins.
So by the end of the season, they could be full-on adolescent giraffes and not newborns struggling to find the ground under them.
I think that's right.
You mentioned the line, and I'm going to connect Georgia Tech to something that you have buried deep within the recesses of your memory. If the line for success is be better than Demetrius Jones Notre Dame.
Oh, God.
Against Georgia Tech.
Oh, God.
Trying to all of a sudden install a new offense on the fly. Do you think the line can be above that by midseason?
Probably not. Midseason?
Whoa.
Probably not.
How many points did they score in that game? Three? Yeah,
I blacked out, but yeah, I mean, look. There's a lot of talent, but it's for a different system. And I do subscribe to the notion that these are still athletic kids. They still know how to play football. They're football players first and not option players first.
Right. That's true.
But it takes a while. This is not easy stuff to just pick up. You can't study it overnight and then get all the machinations down the next day when you go out for practice. It's going to take a while to set in. I think Jeff Collins is a good defensive coach, which is going to help pick up some of the slack for the offense, but it's just going to take a while till they adjust to Dave Patnode's system.
Want to feel old?
Not particularly, but go ahead.
Georgia Tech's running back in that game, Tashard Choice, the great Tashard Choice, is now Georgia Tech's running backs coach.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Shall we move on?
It was 33-3, by the way. So that's the bar for success. Being able to score more than 3 points against the 2007 version of themselves. It's very incestuous. I apologize.
Dan, let's move on.
Okay.
I want to talk about the Syracuse Orange.
Let's.
You familiar with something called the Ewing theory?
Yeah, I am. I mean, for college football, I like the Manning theory.
The Manning theory.
T. Martin winning the national championship after Peyton Manning.
So yeah, the Ewing theory is a Bill Simmons thing about Patrick Ewing and Patrick Ewing not playing for the Knicks, and the team got better, essentially, with him not on the court. But the Manning theory, I think we could apply here as well. Peyton Manning leaves. What happens the very next year? T. Martin and the Tennessee Volunteers win the BCS championship. They're the first BCS champion, right?
Yep.
This year for Syracuse, Eric Dungy, star quarterback, big kid, he's graduated. And now Tommy DeVito, who I'm still going to try and call him Inigata DeVito.
The Chris Bermanization of Ty Hildenbrand is complete.
It's not full Berman. I think it's catchy.
Okay, continue.
DeVito is taking over the Dino Babers offense. He's a different quarterback. He's fast, but he's not quite the runner of Eric Dungy. Is Syracuse now a better team on offense, despite the fact that Eric Dungy, who was so good for them for so long, is now officially off the team?
Eric Dungy was not a great passer. I would go as far as saying he was below average, but coupled with his running, he was a plus at quarterback for sure. They won big games with him. You know, they have I think both of the quarterbacks played against Florida State in the very comfortable win last year. Tommy DeVito looked very good against North Carolina. Real rough. Both looked real rough against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
The reason I'm hesitant is the offensive line has questions. They're okay at receiver. They lost a big piece to transfer. They're okay. I like Mo Neal some at running back. One of my bigger questions is, what does this offense actually look like? Because Eric Dungy ran the ball so much. I think I saw it was 12 or 13 non-sack carries a game. So that's either going to a running back or it's going to a running back via screen or swing pass, sort of how Washington State uses their running backs in a more wide open passing offense. I don't think Tommy DeVito will be running in the way that Eric Dungy did. I like DeVito's arm talent. I like him as a talent. But to run that system, you got to have the bodies. You got to have the star power. And I think they're fine. They were great special teams, which affected field position last year. There was a lot to like about Syracuse's. I think they finished 9-3 in the regular season. I think they take a step back. I think Tommy DeVito is like two-thirds good and a third kind of rough around the edges. So I have here on my little document, you have Syracuse, and I have your question, and the way I interpreted it is touchdown Tommy or Tommy DeVito. Ooh. And I'm not proud of it.
Wow.
I hope we don't have to call him Tommy DeVito, but it really worked out quite well with his last name. So I think they're a step behind. I think he'll be fine, but I don't think he's going to be the gamer that Dungy was necessarily in huge spots. So I have them going from 9 wins to about 7. All to say, still good, still dangerous against whoever they play, especially since Clemson's coming to Western New York. The defensive line, real nice position.
You
mentioned this on the Dude episode.
Yeah.
The pass rush should be good. There are elements that I'm not crazy about, but Syracuse actually tightened up really well last year on third downs and in the red zone. So situationally and special teams wise, there's a lot to like about what they showed last year carrying forward. So I still think they're a bowl team. I still think if they get a couple breaks at the end of games against, you know, the ACC is fine, but it's nothing crazy stacked, they could get back to 8 wins. I still think they're a tick worse than they were last year.
That's fair. You mentioned the line. I'm going to call these guys out again, but Alton Robinson, Kendall Coleman, those are the names to watch along the line. And Syracuse actually has a ton of guys coming back who played as freshmen.
Yeah.
Last year, you look at their defensive backfield, mostly freshmen, really good, almost surprisingly so. They're pretty much all back. Andre Sisco is the guy in the defensive backfield. He's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. He's already a star. He's a ball hawk back there. Keep your eyes and ears open for that name as you're watching ACC football this year. Could be interesting against some of the competition. Mm-hmm. Most notably Clemson very early on in the year. Syracuse won 9 games regular season. They won 10 if you count the bowl. There is another school of thought. Of course, this was a breakout year for Dino Babers, and he's got a lot to be excited about. There is a, I guess, more negative school of thought around what Syracuse did in 2018, and that is that you should temper the results that we saw on the field, given the fact that it was sort of a down year in the ACC as a whole. You could make that case. But you still got to win
that last year. Yeah.
Still got to win the games in front of you. I like Syracuse to win 9 again this season. I like where they're at. I do. I feel good about what Dino is building up there. I like Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito might be a bit extreme. If Inagata DeVito is 80% of a full Berman, that's at least 70%.
That's such an old reference, though.
We span generations here on the show. You know that.
That's true. So the biggest threats outside of Clemson for Syracuse, if I'm guessing, if I'm putting words in your mouth, are NC State, Florida State?
Would agree.
They're both on the road or some combination of their October of NC State, Pitt, Florida State.
I like Syracuse. I think they finish second in the Fat Atlantic.
Okay, fair enough. Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Another team that is certainly worth talking about in terms of changes at the top. It's got to be Miami.
The Canes, baby. C-A-N-E-S.
Former, Mississippi State, Louisiana Tech, Texas, Temple.
ESPN.
Head coach Manny Diaz. So job number one, obviously, discovering a clean, burning, renewable source for swag.
Swag fusion, yes.
Swag fusion. What is job number two if Miami's challenging for the postal with, I think, a lot coming back on defense and not so much on offense?
Job number one is definitely the clean burning swag.
Yes. Always, always, always.
Always. Job number two is getting more consistent quarterback play. Because last year, they were not that far off from having a much better season. They could have gotten a little bit more at the quarterback spot and stayed healthy out wide. It would have been a much different story.
A little more?
I'm being facetious. You get the point.
Wow. Okay.
I think the same holds true at quarterback this year. Now, what I like is that Manny Diaz brought over Dan Enos as the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. Opened some eyes when he came over from Alabama, but that was a really good move. He's been working ever since he got on campus to try and rebuild that quarterback position. The Canes last year, listen to this, 6.1 yards per attempt. That was 116th nationally, almost as bad as Kansas. Not quite.
Right.
Too close for comfort. 0.2 yards better than Kansas. Mm-hmm. If you're a betting man, if you're looking at the quarterback position this year, I still think you look at Nakosi Perry. Wasn't great.
Okay.
Wasn't great last year, but showed flashes. He's probably your starter on August 24th in week zero, is what we call this now, when they square off against Florida. He's got the most experience, but don't forget Tate Martell came down from Ohio State. He transferred in. He's immediately available. Also, Jaren Williams, a redshirt freshman. He is still in the mix as well, if you listen to the way Manny Diaz tells it.
I don't think Tate Martell is that good.
Could well be.
I don't,
well
I don't think he's going to be starting, but we'll see. So the is there confidence from what you can tell in the combination of Dan Enos and a good amount of skill, talent, albeit raw at Miami, and improvement at quarterback? Because you were very kind, albeit, I guess, facetious, in what Miami looked like near the end of the year offensively.
It was
even
bad.
With getting a good, getting a good performance from their defense regardless and still not being able to pull out games. Is there reason, like, obviously, you know, coming out of camp and things like that and press conferences and media day, but we're like, well, it's, you know, it's a new year, it's a new blah, blah, blah. But it's going to take somebody better than Nakosi Perry, isn't it?
I would think so, or at least a better version of Nakosi Perry.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, there are just still a bunch of unknowns about how these guys are going to look in this system. I like the fact, though, you mentioned the defense. We have to bring that up. Manny Diaz has done a couple things, all right? Firstly, he went out and he used a transfer portal, maybe more so than any other college football coach, to add bodies, just about every position, to build depth. And he did so on defense where he's really going to need it because they're a little thin. They're good at the
top.
They're
thin. Good starters, yeah.
Good starters, talented on the top line, but a little thin. Defense is going to be the strength of this team. Miami, one of just 19 teams last year to allow fewer than 20 points per game. They led the nation in tackles for loss, which is a staple of a Manny Diaz defense. And then they went out and they hired Blake Baker away from Louisiana Tech to run the defense, someone who's very like-minded, shares that same defensive mentality with Manny Diaz. Turnover luck from 2017 wasn't quite there in 2018, but we still know that this is an aggressive defense. They like to take the football away. Remember the turnover chain thing? It gripped the nation 2 years ago. Didn't quite carry over, but this is a defense that likes to get behind the line of scrimmage and affect the point of attack. So I think that as a bedrock for where Manny wants to take this team in 2019 is important. There is talent on offense. It's just about assembling the pieces, getting better quarterback play. And I think we also need to mention the offensive line. The offensive line is a bit of a work in progress. Not exactly sure which direction that's going to go. But if they can get better quarterback play, if they can figure out that offensive line and feel more confident about it, I think 2019 is a successful campaign in year one for Manny Diaz.
You actually mentioned one more thing that you wanted to talk about Manny Diaz.
You're talking about his hair?
I am. Well, yeah, Ty, obviously. If there's anybody who's going to talk about a coach's hair on this show,
maybe,
I'm not going to steal that thunder.
Maybe the best head of hair, maybe better hair than Bob Diaco.
Wow. An heir to the throne.
See, because here's the thing about Manny Diaz.
The Diacone.
Here's the thing about Manny Diaz. Bob Diaco didn't use this degree of product in his hair.
Right. You and think this is performance enhancing?
No, I'm saying sometimes it reveals your flaws. You put a little too much product, it clumps together, it doesn't look quite as thick. Manny Diaz still puts the product on, and he's got like a full-on four-layer mane up on top of his head. He's like Mufasa.
Did you go through a period of time in your life where you put a lot of product in your hair, like high school, middle school, something like that?
You know, I did a little in college, and it was totally inadvertent. I didn't realize until I was in the workforce that I was going a little bit overboard.
Little heavy. Little Pauly D.
Little heavy. No, not Pauly D. Let's not that heavy.
I'm a little bit worried about the amount of product he uses in the Miami sun. Because when you create a helmet effect like that, it can keep the steam in, and then you start to drench, and it's unfortunate.
But he's from there.
He is from there.
He's from there.
He knows.
His dad
was
mayor. I don't know if you saw that. His dad was the literal mayor of Miami in the early 2000s. This is like welcome home Scott Frost on steroids.
Yeah.
You'll hear more about that in an upcoming show. But
he did go to Florida State.
Yeah, he went to Florida State, but he's from Miami. Yeah. I think he knows how to handle himself in the hot, hot sun of South Beach.
Next question.
I want to talk about Florida State. You mentioned them briefly there with Manny Diaz.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Florida State's offense kind of a mess last year. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
113th in points per game, 110th in yards per play. There was already, after 1 year, some chatter that Willie Taggart could be on the hot seat after that performance. 5-7, didn't make a bowl. Do you have confidence, Daniel, that the offseason moves Willie Taggart's made are the right ones for Florida State, leading to a more productive second season?
Is Larry Allen going to play guard for Florida State this year? Because if so, now we're talking. Even
that would be helpful.
His retired larger state, we are talking. Yes, I mean, they can only go up from where they were up front offensively last year. And I don't think Walt Bell was a great fit necessarily for Florida State. The running game took a hit. Everything took a hit. And it started with the offensive line, the injuries, the attrition, the misevaluation going in. Everything that could have gone wrong basically went wrong for the offensive line. They bring in Kendall Briles. I don't want to be saying that last name all season long. Maybe they bring in the Stephenville, Texas offense, Stephenville High. But this, it's an offense that is proven. What we saw at Baylor, what we saw at FAU and Houston last year with Derek King, it has to go upward. I know Willie Taggart has a history with him. Offensively, they get in, I think, a couple new linemen from transfer, a grad transfer, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I believe. James Blackman is another year older. Cam Akers should be better. And it has to be better.
Yeah.
It just had, they bring in, I think it's Randy Clements who comes with Kendall Briles from Houston, new offensive line coach. So yes, the offseason moves have to be improving this Florida State squad defensively. I think it's going to be a little bit trickier. The secondary has to be better. It's a bad sign when there are two position groups going in where you say, how could they get worse? How could they stay on the same level? How could that possibly happen in this universe? They've sorted things out, I think, in the secondary, moved safeties and corners back and forth to find the right fits. The talent is there. The offensive line, even if the offensive line has just said, well, that's their weakness. Even if it's that matter of fact, Florida State will be better. Even if it's not saying it is a void with a depth that is not seen by modern science.
Right, right.
That's an improvement.
Well, look.
So
the line,
7-8 wins feels like a really nice step forward for
the
them.
Line was dreadful a year ago. It can't get any worse. In 12 games, Florida State started 9 different combinations of linemen.
Mm-hmm.
That was not a recipe for an efficient offense.
No, not at all.
Not in the least bit. It can only get better along the offensive line. It looks like it's going to be James Blackman. We'll mention him again.
Mm-hmm.
I caught some flack earlier in the offseason when I said that Alex Hornibrook would be a clear upgrade over James Blackman.
Wow.
Sounds like James Blackman is going to be your starter.
T- To be determined.
To be determined, sure.
I mean, basically, if Kendall Briles can figure out a way to get the ball creatively to Cam Akers and to Marion Terry quickly, that you're already talking about a step forward. Defensively, they lose their best pass rusher in Brian Burns. I think they sort things out pretty nicely at linebacker, and we mentioned the secondary. They've got promising guys in the middle. Marvin Wilson, I think, was a former, if he wasn't the number one overall recruit, he was like two or three a couple years ago. And so he has potential to have a breakout season. So they should be in a pretty good place if they can maintain health and come into the season with that full reboot mentality.
It is not the easiest schedule, though. They've got Boise State and Florida to bookend their season. The Boise State game is going to be really interesting right out of the chute. Week one, neutral site game. I use neutral site in quotes. It's played in Jacksonville.
Yep.
But we'll see what Florida State's got right out of the chute. In between the start and finish of the season, at Virginia, at Clemson, home against Miami. There's a Syracuse game just sort of hanging out in there, which could also be interesting. So I agree with you. 7-8 wins, it's certainly not where Florida State wants to be longer term. But I think you're looking at this, you have to look at this from the perspective of, is our line going to get better? Is our offense going to feel better than it did a year ago? How is that secondary going to look? If you see noted improvement across the board as a Florida State fan, I would be really encouraged. Because let's be honest, Clemson is still a buzzsaw this year. You want to have a good season. You want to feel like it's going in a good direction. You want to eventually catch Clemson. You ain't going to catch him in 2019.
No. And it's, by the way, Ryan Roberts, not Ryan Fitzpatrick. Oh, that would be great if Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing right tackle
sure.
for Florida State. It'd be wonderful.
All right. Where are we going next here?
Okay. Back to the postal?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, this surprised me. Maybe it's just because it's been so many months since the season, but last year's best Coastal quarterback was, and please don't look up the rest of them, Bryce Perkins, Virginia.
Yeah.
He led the Postal in yards per attempt, rating, completion percentage. He was the dude and, you know, led a surprisingly fun Virginia season that fell just short after they lost to Pitt, I believe, in a bunch of muck. That was like a really ugly weather game. Does that hold? Does Bryce Perkins maintain his position atop the Coastal quarterback rankings? And please show your work, Ty.
Don't please show, like, this is a rubric.
Yeah, yeah.
The answer is yes.
I want the proof.
The answer is yes. Both
okay.
enthusiastically, because I believe it. He was really good last year. And also simply by process of elimination. If it's not him, then who?
Well, Kendall Briles and James Blackman. Oh, other side.
Right, wrong side.
Tricky. Tricky.
I guess you can make a case for Ryan Willis, but that's a tough sell. We'll get into Virginia Tech here in a little bit. Perkins was one of only two players last year with more than 2,400 passing yards and 800 rushing yards. The other guy won the Heisman Trophy and was drafted number one overall into the NFL.
Right.
I'm not saying Bryce Perkins is Kyler Murray, but would I take him over N'Kosi Perry or Kenny Pickett or Sam Howell? Of course I would. Of course
they Sam Howell starts. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Virginia last year, 7-5. They shut out South Carolina in the bowl game. I know I've told the story before about Bronco Mendenhall, but he was one of my favorite interviews that we've ever done on this show. The question then
It takes is a coach talking about pizza, and Ty and I are submitting.
It was pizza, and it was his son's names, remember?
Oh, yeah. He has great, great son names. Yeah.
But the question then was, how is he going to acclimate to a place like Virginia where he doesn't have a ton of familiarity or didn't have a ton of familiarity, didn't have the recruiting inroads that everyone thought he needed?
Right.
How is he going to adapt? And of course, all that stuff helps, right? But what's becoming clear now is that Bronco just knows what he's doing.
Maybe he's just a good coach.
He's just a good coach, right?
Yeah.
They've improved each of his first three seasons in Charlottesville. It stands to reason that they're going to improve yet again because there's a lot coming back. I think a lot of 2019 comes down to whether the offense can create big plays and whether the defense can stop big plays. Mm-hmm. That was a thorn in their side on both fronts from a year ago. But eight starters back on defense, a really good secondary. They're at Notre Dame. They're at Miami, right in the middle, right in the meaty part of that season. But you look at this Virginia team, And I think there is a ton of reason to be optimistic here for them to take another step forward, another year under Bryce Perkins, Bronco Mendenhall, a lot back on defense. I am very optimistic about the Hoos in 2019.
Okay. I'm glad to hear it because Virginia was hanging around in a very strange way last year where I think if they had beaten Pitt, they were either going to clinch the Coastal or would clinch the Coastal.
Sure.
And just hanging around, musical chairs are sliding out one by one. It's like, oh, hey, hi, Virginia. And would have been wild if they won the Coastal and the basketball team wins the national championship in the same year. Probably could have gotten some decent cash on that.
The thing is, though, you look at Virginia and it's been a while since this program was notable.
Yeah.
It really has. So to see them bubble up the way they have now under Bronco Mendenhall, there is definitely a tendency among fans to look at them and not take them seriously. Like it's some sort of flash in the pan, and maybe they are the beneficiary of a weak ACC. Virginia was good. They were legitimately good last year. They're going to be legitimately good again this year. And I'm excited to see what they can do because Bryce Perkins, as I said, best quarterback in that side of the ACC, bar none.
Shout out to Continental Divide. Shout out Little John's. Shout out the Belmont. All great in Charlottesville. That's all.
I'm excited about Virginia this year.
All right.
Daniel, I have a question for you.
I'm ready.
Tell me about your experience with Indochino.
Oh, that is a loaded question.
You went to get fitted, did you not?
I did go to get fitted. There is a place to get fitted in Brooklyn, so I made the trek to get fitted, and it was incredible.
Really?
It was so cool. I was going in thinking, like, you know when you get a suit altered and or you go to a tailor and they just sort of measure you like tip to tip of your hand.
They put you up on like that on that little weird podium, right? It's kind of
weird. Little weird podium, and it takes a few minutes and you're just like, all right, this is your waist, this is your this is the distance around your chest, this is your neck size, whatever. And then you just move on and go grocery shopping, whatever. Not with Indochino. Not with going to a showroom to get fitted for a custom suit.
So is it like getting fitted for the bat suit? What exactly is this like?
I think more specific than a bat suit. It was we've mentioned, I think with a mattress company, we've done spots for the natural topography or geometry.
Yeah.
It was busting out protractors for my natural geometry.
Whoa.
It was around all leg types and different cuts of suit types that fit my body type and around my chest and my waist and head and everything. And I was turning to the side and there were different angles. It took the better part of 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, very important question. Then I promise we'll get to the actual meat of this ad.
Yes.
Did they use lasers?
They did not. They should.
No.
I had a conversation about lasers. I think it was Jose was my guy. Really great service. Could not recommend going to a showroom enough to get fitted for a custom suit, despite the lack of lasers. They were super nice. They were attentive to my natural geometry once again. I am very excited for this Indochino custom suit to arrive. It's great and crazy affordable.
All right. Indochino, if you haven't gathered by now, they make suits and shirts to your exact measurements. Maybe not with lasers, but that's okay. It gives you an unparalleled fit, unparalleled comfort. The process is easy. You could do what Dan did. Go to one of their 40 North American showrooms and have them take your measurements in a really cool way. Or you could do it at home. Shop online at Indochino.com. You submit your measurements, give them your design choices. Then they're going to professionally tailor your suit and send it to you. Our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $369 at Indochino.com. That's Indochino.com. Enter SOLID at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price. A made-to-measure premium suit. Shipping is free. Indochino.com, promo code SOLID. One more time, any premium suit. $369, free shipping. An incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
No brainer. Come on.
Now, for my actual ACC question, Daniel.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Louisville.
Louisville.
Did you read any of the coverage from ACC Media Day?
No, I definitely didn't. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I read a little bit, yes.
Scott Satterfield, new coach at Louisville.
Louisville.
He said that players weren't previously allowed to walk into coaches' offices.
Woof.
Yeah. At Louisville, which does not seem like it promotes a whole lot of trust within the program.
Right.
But that
they
aside,
have to send actual cardinals with their messages into the windows to get any point across.
You wouldn't think cardinals could be used in a messaging capacity, but they can.
Mm-hmm.
What else, Daniel, outside of being a little bit more of a open door situation, will Scott Satterfield be doing differently at Louisville? What can fans expect that's going to look different, feel different from what they saw under Bobby Petrino?
I think they will not lose many games by 7,000 points. I think that will be a good first step.
It's a good start.
Differences. It's going to be culture initially. They don't have the talent right now. They don't have the depth right now. As they switch systems a little bit, you know, Bobby Petrino, even though Lamar Jackson was, yes, very much a running quarterback who could also throw incredibly well, they're switching systems a bit and they're recruiting more to what they are going to try to do offensively, which I think is going to be more reedy with the quarterback. We saw it at App State really succeed. He brings over a number of his coaches. He brings back Court Dennison, who was at Louisville before, now comes back after a year at Oregon coaching linebackers. So I think he's the co-DC. So culturally, I think there is going to be a lot more buy-in and a lot more players simply liking the coaches they play for and the head coach for which they play than where they've been these past few years. I also think it's going to take a good chunk of time to fully get both the culture and talent level and depth to a place that Louisville can compete just week in and week out in the ACC, just because it's not just Bobby Petrino screwing things up at the end. It's, well, how did he recruit? How did he evaluate? Because everywhere he goes, he leaves it kind of a mess, which is sort of selling what he actually leaves behind short. So the good news is, App State, as much as you have fought the Mountaineers on this, they've been a really, really good program in the Sun Belt. Maybe not beating Miami. I mean, they put 38 on Penn State, came back and almost won that game last year in Happy Valley. Does that sound right?
Sure.
So they looked App State last year like, at the very least, a pretty good Big Ten team, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Their defense was excellent, especially against the pass. Seems helpful in the ACC if they can keep that going. The offense was very good, especially on the ground. So there are things to like about this year's squad. Dez Fitzpatrick, the receivers are pretty strong. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do at quarterback. Your guy Puma Pass is probably in the lead to get that job once again. But Malik Cunningham offers more of an athletic perspective if they're going to look to run a little bit more this year. I know he brought a quarterback commit in from who was committed to App State to Louisville. So if they're truly horrendous once again with a little bit of promise, maybe he starts playing by the end of the year. It's a rough schedule. So that's, you know, kind of the same. They have Notre Dame. They go to Florida State, Clemson. I think they're at Miami, at NC State, and they finish at Kentucky. So it's going to be a tough go. But even if they go 3-9, 4-8, 2-10, whatever they do, the big difference is going to be the effort, the buy-in, the attitude. And if they happen to find themselves in a 16-13 game, maybe that effort, attitude, buy-in holds on or comes back, whatever. Maybe they tip a 50-50 game because the players seem to care a lot more for four full quarters. So that's the big difference, no matter what the final record is.
And hopefully they play some better damn defense, huh?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Last year, Louisville on our show was a punchline on defense.
Yeah, they said Bobby Petrino bought a yacht betting against himself? Yeah.
He could have. Louisville went 2-10. The defense was atrocious. Defense at App State has been one of Satterfield's calling cards. In addition to running a pretty run-heavy system on offense, really good defensive coach. And I think if you're a Louisville fan, you'll take that right now. I don't know if you measure success in terms of wins and losses in year one. I think you just hope for a new foundation that you can build upon in the future. That would be
fourth,
a good start.
I was going to say fourth defensive coordinator now in 4 years for those upperclassmen.
And it's not Brian Van Gorder, which is an improvement.
Not BVG, Peter Sermon, not great, but Third and Grantham was good for them.
Yeah.
I'd stand by that forever and ever.
So we'll see. I am excited about Scott Satterfield. I know you were excited when he was hired. You thought that was a sneaky good hire. Of course, Jeff Brohm was the name that was more closely tied to this opening. But Scott Satterfield coming over from App State, sneaky good hire, a solid hire. He's going to build this program into, I think, something that's a lot more sustainable than under the old model.
Yeah, the big thing is going to be from the administration. I think they're all on the same page, that they're breaking this down to the studs and rebuilding. They can't expect to win 9 games next year. That's just, you can't speed up this kind of rebuild when it sunk to the depths that it did last year.
All right, Dan, where are we going next here?
All right, let's talk about Mac Brown.
Oh, boy.
How about that?
Oh,
we've waited
boy.
This long.
Yeah.
So, North Carolina, not as bad. I love this. Not as bad as their record indicates. Yeah, they were. They had chances to win games and they didn't win it,
they
so
were,
that's
Dan.
Not great.
Yeah.
Right. But they weren't Louisville. They were not truly heinous at college football last year. So, to you, if they're going to scratch and claw and improve to threatening bowl eligibility this year, you know, okay. 5 games late November, you know, a couple left, 5 wins, excuse me, what will be the reason why they are scratching and pawing at the door of bowl eligibility?
Okay. Interesting.
Because they were in a lot of those games.
They were in a lot of those games.
There were opportunities to win 6-7 games last year.
The elephant in the room is that they've got a new old coach.
Yeah.
And that's Mac Brown. I think I saw, 22 years since he was last there. He is the front man for this operation. He's already doing the whole charm offensive thing, which I may draft for my Fantasy Things roster. But
do it.
If North Carolina is going to paw at bowl eligibility, I don't think it's because of Mac Brown. I think it's because of Phil Longo. I think it's because of Jay Bateman. They're offensive and defensive coordinators now at Chapel Hill. Phil Longo, he needs to rekindle some of the magic that he had running the offense at Ole Miss. He's going to have to do it with presumably Sam Howell, who I think is the odds-on favorite to be starter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to do it with a personnel group that might be better suited for the run, even though he wants to pass it.
Right.
So there's an interesting conflict there. But, you know, there is some experience out wide. If he can find something that works, if he can use space and tempo to his advantage, which we know he wants to do, then UNC could at least be somewhat serviceable on offense. But that's a big if. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they need to get better. Everyone knows that. Jay Bateman comes in from Army. He's got this reputation for being an innovator, very innovative, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to need to be real innovative because opponents have literally no reason to try and throw against these guys. Their run defense looks like it's going to be super porous. He needs to somehow force the issue, make teams throw into the teeth of that secondary, because it actually should be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what needs to happen. We need to have Phil Longo rekindling some of that Ole Miss magic. We need to have Jay Bateman finding some way to force teams to throw. It is a tough draw for Mac Brown in year one. It's not easy out of the chute. South Carolina, Miami, Wake, App State, Clemson, all in September. 5 wins would be an absolute revelation.
Wow. Okay. So pawing and scratching at bowl eligibility seems distant.
I think that's out of the equation entirely. But if they can just look like they're building something in a better direction, that to me would be a huge improvement. I think he can do it. I know this formula for bringing back the old coach hasn't always been that fruitful, but I like Mac Brown. I think he can still recruit. I need to see that everyone is rowing in the same direction and building towards something more.
Couple fun things for me about this North Carolina team. Well, first of all, you've penciled Sam Howell in as the starter, the true freshman blue chip quarterback. Maybe that happens. I mean, nobody really has that much experience at quarterback.
No.
And why is that? Because Chaz Surratt is a linebacker.
That's right.
He is Joel Lanning, maybe, hopefully, for North Carolina. I always loved the linebacker from quarterback, not the reverse Maryland. But I like that storyline. I like that perhaps we see a true freshman quarterback, if not to start the season, probably pretty quickly.
Dan, this is the worst quarterback situation in all the ACC right here.
Unless
he's really good. But
yeah.
Without any basis.
Or Jace Reuter or whoever, yeah.
Without any basis otherwise.
Right.
If I'm looking across all 14 teams, I say North Carolina has the worst situation in the ACC. So there is certainly room to grow there.
Mm-hmm.
He could be really good, but we won't know what Phil Longo has to work with until we see him out there.
The other thing is the push-pull, the alley-ooping that we've talked about in years past of Phil Longo at offensive coordinator playing with pace, wide open offense. Jay Bateman's used to, not to say he can't succeed at North Carolina, but he's used to coaching a defense on a team whose offense possesses the hell out of the ball in Army. And he did a pretty good job for Army. If you actually break it down for pace, he was sort of below average a chunk of the time there. I'm curious to see what that change looks like for him in that defense, because the stress of an offense moving quickly and scoring, or moving quickly and going three and out on the defense and getting back on the field, especially when you can't stop the run, you're not particularly deep anywhere, can be pretty extreme. So that push-pull alley-oop in a not-so-good way, you've seen alley-oops go wrong. Mm-hmm. I hope it doesn't happen at a basketball school like North Carolina, but that's going to be a challenge, how they marry systems on both sides of the ball.
Just two wins last year, Mack Brown taking back over. I wish him well. Certainly, he is doing his best to put a very positive spin on this situation. He's not going to be the long-term answer. The guy's 67, so he's trying to build something, get it started on the right course, presumably then to hand it off to somebody else who can take it from there. But Phil Longo, Jay Bateman, a lot rests on their shoulders and what they're able to mold with this unit in 2019.
Two wins, although I think they had a game canceled. The UCF canceled. Game was canceled. So it's 2-9. They would not have beaten UCF.
No.
But they had, Cal, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, I think was double or triple overtime. Duke, NC State. These were all winnable games, which is not necessarily a great thing, but also they're not Louisville. We're losing by 50. So I think there's some hope that there is a good amount of buy-in from the players, that even if they're losing, they're playing hard. You know, that the NC State game goes to overtime, and they're a 2-8 team at that point. So they're playing hard in a rivalry game. I think that's an encouraging thing for North Carolina as they move forward. And I think Mack Brown's going to recruit pretty well.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know about what the long-term coaching prognosis is, but I think they get in some blue chips in a pretty good region to recruit.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. Daniel.
Hit me.
Are you familiar with a book, Oh, the Places You'll Go?
Not only am I familiar, I've read it to my son multiple times. And
I love that book.
He has tried to eat that book.
I love that book. And I know maybe it's cliche. I got it as a gift, I think, from Mama H after I graduated high school. I've got it here on my bookshelf in the studio. Constant reminder. Right. And I'm reminded of a passage that Dr. Seuss wrote about something called the waiting place.
Okay.
Waiting for the fish to bite, or waiting for wind to fly a kite, or waiting around for Friday night, or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake, or a pot to boil, or a better break, or a string of pearls, or a pair of pants, or a wig with curls, or another chance. Everyone is just waiting. So my question to you is, Dan, what must NC State do to finally escape the waiting place?
So does the waiting place mean they're pretty good in a division they probably won't win for a long, 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 long time because Dabo Swinney exists?
I think that's right.
Last year they go 9-3.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's good. It is good.
9-3 is good. They had precisely one indefensible loss. They scored like 20 points against Wake Forest and lost. But they got murdered by Clemson, and they lost a shootout to Syracuse, both of whom they lost to on the road. Those are both okay. I can't be angry at NC State for those results. They should be a little bit more competitive against Clemson after the past couple of years where they were, but they beat their rival. They murdered Louisville. They comfortably beat Florida State. They beat a decent enough Virginia team. I think they had, the West Virginia game was canceled, and their schedule wasn't particularly difficult, and they looked pretty atrocious against Texas A&M. But what's wrong with being 9-3 in the ACC pretty consistently?
9-3
is good. That's what I ask you.
So you're saying that they've already escaped the waiting place?
I think so. I think they could be a 6-6 program with too much neglect at certain places. But I think they've recruited smartly. You know, he's hired really well. Now, Eli Drinkwitz is on to App State, the offensive coordinator, who had a good deal of success in Raleigh. I've heard great things about the town of Raleigh, by the way. Home to Chip Patterson and Will Brinson.
That's right.
Matt McKay is the probable starter, sort of a tall, lean, redshirt sophomore. Bam Knight is a promising name at running back, sort of an explosive potential guy. A lot of the defense is back. It's one of those good news, bad news. Great. They're familiar. They're experienced. They were real bad against the pass last year. They did not get pressure. The secondary was kind of a nightmare. I guess they tightened up in the red zone, which is fine. Schedule's fine as well. They have Clemson, Syracuse, North Carolina at home. They're at West Virginia, at Florida State. But I don't see, even without Ryan Finley, I don't see a huge step back. There's enough talent at enough places.
But hold on.
Yeah.
They're not just without Ryan Finley. They're without Reggie Gillespie. They're without Kelvin Harmon, without Jacoby Myers, Tyler Jones, Tyrone Prescott, Garrett Bradbury. A ton of guys here that are walking out that door. Defense should be pretty good, but remains to be
seen. Yeah, they were good against the run.
Remains to be seen to me how they're going to fare against this schedule, which I agree with you isn't totally daunting on its face, but the road trips aren't the best. And I see a bunch of one possession games in there. That's sort of the recurring theme as you look across the ACC.
So there are 2.5 teams where it's totally defensible that they lose to me. Some combination of West Virginia, Florida State, Clemson. Those are all, and Syracuse. Those are all somewhat defensible losses, but I think they can beat Syracuse at home. I think they can beat Florida State on the road after what they did to them last year. West Virginia has a first-year head coach. North Carolina, their rival, first-year head coach. Georgia Tech on the road, first-year head coach. Louisville at home a week after Clemson, first-year head coach, rebuilding project. Going to Wake, it's not pleasant, but it's not, going to the Tokyo Dome.
Right.
At Boston College and whatever the hell Boston College is trying to do offensively. If NC State is a team that's always good enough to win most of the games, if not all of the games they should, maybe this is a Manning theory with Ryan Finley.
Okay.
I feel much better about the continuity of what Dave Doran has done in Raleigh than a lot of the teams on their schedule.
That's fair. Where are we going next?
All right, Ty, my next question to you is an important one. What do you think about Indochina? Oh, no, we did that, right? We do? Okay. Let's talk about, and I hate this, but let's talk about Virginia Tech. Because I had such a good time in Blacksburg, and they are, I don't want to say quietly, because that's disrespectful. People pay attention to Virginia Tech, but they've gotten worse by a game in the ACC each year of Justin Fuente, and don't let it get lost that now Mac Brown, who pronounced his name like that, and Justin Fuente are in the same division.
They are, yeah.
If the trend continues of getting worse by a game each year in the ACC, they go 4-4 last year, so they would potentially go 3-5 this year in the ACC. What's the difference for them between going 3-5 and getting back to 5-3 as they did in Fuente's first year?
The difference is twofold. First off, can a brother get some stability at quarterback? Please.
Oh my God.
Please, Daniel.
Okay.
Josh,
comfortable.
Josh Jackson snapped a leg last year. That had an impact.
Yes.
Ryan Willis came in. He was the fourth highest rated passer in the conference. He got good experience. He's back this year. He's got a good arm.
Mm-hmm.
He's got good receiving targets out wide at tight end. That should help. The offense should be better.
The defense
has to be better, Dan.
Gotta.
For so long, this has been the calling card for Virginia Tech, and specifically Bud Foster and the lunch pail defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last year.
Do you think Kirk Herbstreit is heartbroken about that?
Has to be. Last season, Tech gave up 15 more points per game than it did in 2017. 15! It's like 2 touchdowns. 15!
Okay, yeah.
It has to get better. Has to get better. The season last year was underwhelming if you're a Tech fan. They finished, if you count the bowl loss to Cincinnati, under 500 for the first time since 1992. That is not a good look for Justin Fuente. But what I like about this team this year, and why I think they get better is a lot of returning production. Doesn't mean everything, but there's a fair amount of continuity now coming back, even despite the turnover that they've had via transfers and the injuries they've had to deal with in the past. They're 11th in returning production this season. And while it could go either way for Virginia Tech this year, they're tough to predict. Mm-hmm. I think Justin Fuente still has what it takes. He hasn't been bad. He just hasn't been good enough. This revolving door hopefully ends in 2019 and they finally can build on something. So I am optimistic about the Hokies.
Road schedule mixed because they do have Miami and Notre Dame on the road, but otherwise it's okay. They miss Clemson. Always great. I believe they miss Florida State as well. So that's great. You'd like to see it before believing it with how this offense has looked, and really how the defense looked last year. So I'm hopeful that they're at least 500 in the ACC. They have what? ODU again.
Mm-hmm.
Win that game, please, Hokies.
That was the game last
the ODU
year
game. Yeah.
Where Josh Jackson broke his leg. And remember, Virginia Tech lost that game.
Right. They have Rhode Island. They have Furman. They should be able to pad enough. They have Wake at home. They have North Carolina at home. They should be a bowl team. They should probably get to 7 games. This is not a terrible, terrible schedule. You know, that Miami and Notre Dame road trips aside. So I'm rooting for Virginia Tech to have a comeback year.
Ryan Willis was not bad last year.
No, he's fine.
Was not bad. He's a sneaky choice for one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC.
Yeah. I don't know if that's an indictment of the ACC or a compliment, but yes.
I'm intending it as a compliment.
Good.
For Ryan Willis. 24 touchdowns, 9 interceptions last year, an above average arm, a good player, a good prospect. I think he has what it takes. He's got targets out wide and at tight end. It's there. Maybe not to the extent that Virginia Tech fans want, but I think we're going to see a big jump forward in 2019.
Look at you. Sunshine pumping Hokie.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Steve Adazio. Speaking
just
of
a bunch of guys being dudes.
Speaking,
you want to play
of,
the sound?
I can. We also have the dude remix.
It's better than this. Guys being dudes.
We're gonna have to play that one over and over when we talk about Boston College this year.
If anybody from Boston College is listening and you want that drop for first downs or when BC has third down on defense and you're trying to get everybody pumped.
Yeah, we can do that.
Just let us know. We got you.
SolidVerbal@gmail.com. Steve Adazio. Mm-hmm. He has won exactly 7 games in 5 of his 6 seasons at BC. Each year, a couple names that bubble up. We have this.
Mm-hmm.
But are we going to see any proof in 2019 that this is a program that's actually improving? Striving to win more than 7 games.
I don't see it. I don't really see it. It's not because they're not talented. It's not because they don't have a good defense. I think it's all offense. I think it's all a dull-headedness about what BC's offense should be. And it's, we got to control the line of scrimmage. No. We got to run power. We got to win this game in the trenches. And Boston College is not really going to have consistently the talent up front to do so and to have a quarterback who can take advantage and play action. I think Boston College is a place you have to be a lot more creative and think about running a unique system. You don't have to run the option, but you have to open things up. You have to say, okay, we're going to find a bunch of like super fast 5'8 dudes who are going to be too short for Penn State in the Northeast or Syracuse, but let's figure out something to do with them. And Boston College is, let's just run off tackle. And they have a new offensive coordinator. It's former Butch Jones guy who was awesome at Central Michigan, Mike Bajakian. He was okay at Cincinnati. I imagine Tennessee fans are not a huge fan of his, what Tennessee offense looked like early on in Butch Jones' career there. But man, the offenses have ranged from like average to horrid. Sometimes they're kind of bad, which is fine. This year, they'll have a new offensive line, but I'm not terribly worried. You've got 2 offensive line coaches because of Adazio also serving in that role.
A lot of turnover up front, though, Dan.
Turnover up front. I thought Anthony Brown if the argument is that Bryce Perkins isn't the second best quarterback in the ACC, it might be Anthony Brown. He got pretty good. Kobe White's pretty good out wide. A.J. Dillon has stud tendencies, which is what they said about you in high school, Ty. Mm-hmm,
they did.
But they use him in such a way that he's, you know, getting 3 yards and falling forward. So I don't think it's fully his fault. I think it's more of a limitation by the system. It'll be a new look defense. They promoted their new defensive coordinator. The line up front on defense is also almost entirely new.
Right.
I think they're a 6-6 team. I think getting anything above 7 wins, which is where they were last year, I think they just give themselves a ceiling. And so
they were, yeah, they were 7-5 last year. They played, you'll remember, those glorious 32 plays in the First Responder Bowl, which got canceled because
right.
of the lightning.
Yep.
But 7-5, right on the number. I'm with you. I think they get marginally worse this year. And I think it's due to that defensive turnover that you just addressed.
I'm not as worried about that. I think they'll be okay there.
I'm worried about it because we've got turnover at defensive end, the entire secondary. And just as a whole, the way that this program has operated is they've really relied upon that defense to pick up for the offense, because the offense has never been, never been something that you can feel confident in. But now if the defense is going to get worse, I think it makes Boston College marginally worse as well. So 6-6 or 5-7 feels about right to me.
They lose Hamp Cheevers, who was a great ball hawk for them at corner. They were, and why I think it's the offense rather than the defense is you can get effort. I think these guys are going to get effort. I think they're going to get stops. Offensively, they were so bad on third down, just staying ahead of the chains, just keeping drives going to keep, if they're going to rely on their defense, give them some rest, guys. Let's go alley-oop here. If they're able to improve, like your question asks, from last year, it means Mike Bajakian game plans well, keeps them ahead of those chains, and gets a little bit creative. I just think he's going to be hamstrung by Steve Adazio. I really do. I think they're going to be hamstrung by saying, we want to control clock, you know, all that voice over and over
again. It's a very good impression. You're very good at this.
Thank you. They were awful in first halves in winnable games where they had to crawl back. They had to rely on Anthony Brown. They dig their own grave too often for me to think, well, they're going the right way. I don't think that at all.
All right. Where are we going next year?
By the way, the second half of their schedule, they could start 5-1 and still not make a bowl. The second half of their schedule is NC State, at Clemson, at Syracuse, Florida State, at Notre Dame, at Pitt.
It's very backloaded.
Remember when Kansas started out 6-0, or just Kansas or Baylor 6-0 and finished 6-6? It could be that kind of year.
That was Baylor.
Boston College. It was Baylor. Okay. So, next question. Does a team have a schedule? Is it schedule of death, group of death in the World Cup?
It's usually the group of death, yes.
Group of death. Does somebody have that? Or does somebody have, can they just stumble into bowl eligibility because of a particularly easy schedule?
So, if you're asking about the schedule of death.
Yeah.
The answer is Louisville. But we already covered Louisville, and I know you want me to answer Duke with this.
Hit me with some Duke.
So I will stick with that. They open the year with Alabama, which
it does not seem optimal.
Not optimal. They don't have to play Clemson, which is good, but they do have to play Notre Dame. They do have to play Miami, Syracuse, at Virginia. That's tough. In a vacuum, that is tough. I don't care who you are. Then there's the whole thing about them turning over so much on offense. They have to navigate that schedule without Daniel Jones, who was drafted still astoundingly 6th overall by my Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Then they've got turnover at wide receiver as well. Again, in a vacuum, you look at what that typically does to numbers and efficiency, and it's a recipe for regression. You take those two things, the schedule and the turnover, in tandem with one another, and that's just a tough look. Tough look for 2019. Duke's been very consistent under David Cutcliffe, and that should not be undersold. If you're a loyal viewer of the ACC network, which of course we are, it's worth noting that 2020, 2021, they look much more promising for the Duke Blue Devils. But I think in 2019, we see a bit of a step back just because it's going to take a while for them to figure out this offense. It's going to take a while for them to do so in the face of what looks to be a really tough schedule.
Can they improve at quarterback?
Can they improve?
Yeah. What is it, Quinton Harris?
Quinton Harris, looks to be the new starting quarterback. Very limited experience. He waited his turn behind Daniel Jones.
I don't think Daniel Jones is that good.
I don't think he's that good either, but...
Can they improve?
But here's the point. Daniel Jones was there for a while, had a lot of good experience, and had an experienced wide receiving core to throw to. This year, Duke has a new starting quarterback and essentially a new wide receiving core. They may not move the ball at all against Alabama. It may take them a while to move the ball in general. Can they improve over the long term? Maybe. This year, I don't think we'll see it. There's just too much turnover.
Right. Yeah. Duke was, depending on the metric you care about, 12th or 13th out of 14 teams passing the ball, whether it's rating or yards per attempt, whatever. It was, forget the Daniel Jones comedy of being taken number six overall. That's pretty stunning in a down year from a David Cutcliffe experienced quarterback.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
The passing offense was that disappointing, I guess, would be the most accurate word. I don't know. They finished the season well in their bowl game against Temple, obviously, but for them to go through their ACC schedule, and I know, you know, people are beat up, whatever, but it was a rough watch.
One other thing here.
Yeah.
A lot of experience up the middle on defense and on the backside of the defense.
Okay.
They were banged up. They were young last year. They still played pretty well. They got to find a way to rush the passer this year, though. That was the issue last year. There isn't a clear solution, but I did see our friend Bill Connolly, newly with ESPN. He's got them projected as the 38th best defense, according to his S&P Plus. And, you know, that's a significant talking point, because in neither football nor basketball do we look at Duke and say, hey, they play pretty good defense.
Right.
38th overall in defense would be pretty good for Duke.
They were fun a couple years ago with Jim Knowles. They were.
They've been pretty consistent, again, across the board. So if they can get that level of production from their defense, it papers over some of the issues that I think they're going to have on offense. Duke is still going to be fine. I see some regression because of the turnover, particularly at quarterback and wide receiver.
They have a co-defensive coordinator. I know nothing about him, but I'm looking at their coaching staff right now. His name is Matt Guerrieri. I don't know. It's Guerrieri.
Okay.
Okay.
What a vowel.
He graduated college in 2011.
Whoa.
Okie doke. So he's 30?
30.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So I it has nothing to do with whether or not I think Duke will be good or bad on defense. I am just stunned. I am stunned.
You just feel old, is what you're saying.
I just feel very, very, and he looks 19.
Yeah.
He looks like he is about to serve you food at Pita Pit. Did you have Pita Pit in State College?
We did have a Pita Pit. I think every college town had a Pita Pit.
Yeah. So I feel okay about Duke in the long term, but this, I mean, the schedule is rough.
It's tough.
Schedule is not great. So yeah, hopefully they can get better through the air at least.
My final question for you about the ACC Fatlantic. It's about Dave Clawson, Dan.
Okay.
Dave Clawson, newly extended at Wake Forest through, I think, 2026. Congratulations to him.
Great.
He said that it's taken him 5 years to get Wake Forest back to a point of being a, quote, normal program.
Mm-hmm.
Normal's relative. What does that mean?
Always.
I think it means better depth. I know it means better facilities. That's been one area of emphasis. Mm-hmm. On the field for him, it has equated to three straight winning seasons, or winning records, if you want to be particular. Three straight bowl wins. It's sort of been a slow burn of constantly improving in the margins for Wake Forest. How far off are we from a true breakout season where they finished a year with like 9 wins or something crazy?
Ty, remember when the Wolford wagon was rolling at Wake Forest?
Yeah.
That's the breakout year.
Okay.
It happened. I think normal in not even Wake Forest case, but if that word is being used, the only thing I can think it means is not a nightmare. It's above a nightmare. That's all I think. Like, Yeah, things are operating. We have people working in various departments. We have chairs. We have a practice schedule. We have water for the players after practice. Somebody vacuums the locker room. Like, I think things are just operating as they should. And they're recruiting on the level that they should for not necessarily a top-tier ACC team, but a respectable, bowl-eligible ACC team. That's normal. That's not a nightmare. The only way I could see Wake Forest getting to 9 wins is if whatever polluted the minds of Louisville players last year pollutes like 6 teams this year in the ACC. That or like Trevor Lawrence, T. Higgins, Travis Etienne, and Justin Ross are like, why don't we just transfer to Wake and be legends? Why don't we just do it, guys? Let's get to Winnie-Salem. Outside of that, normal is great for Wake Forest. Getting to a bowl game is great. Having two capable quarterbacks and Jamie Newman, teenage heartthrob sounding name, definitely, and Sam Hartman is wonderful. Having, you know, depth at positions, even though I think their defense is going to be kind of a nightmare this year, especially in the middle, they're a team that they play quickly, they're coached well, they take talent that's probably 4 or 5 win team talent and get to 6 or 7. Wake is in a great place. Go Deeks. Normal is great. They're sailing right now. Stop being selfish and asking for 9 wins from my beautiful Demon Deacons.
I like Wake Forest. I do.
Yeah.
I like the job that Dave Clawson's done. I'm curious to see how they replace the production of Greg Dortch. One of my favorite names, torched by the Dortch, you know.
All-timer.
Got a good laugh out of that. 125 targets. 8 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards walking out the door. They got to find a solution. Got to find a target out wide. And I do think, though you called attention to the defense, I think they'll defend the run pretty well.
Okay.
They didn't have nearly enough of a pass rush. Last year.
Yeah.
So I think they got to cure the pass rush. But I think they'll be good enough against the run. And sure, it might be a bit greedy asking for 9 wins, but the question needed to be asked. It is a program that has consistently gotten better. He's gotten them to normal. The next logical question is, can he take them above normal? So we'll see.
Let me hit you with this. I don't think it's going to happen, and it might end in August, my question, and it's any sort of relevance tied to it. Utah State, new coach, Gary Anderson, new old coach, Rice, North Carolina with Mac Brown, Elon, at Boston College, Louisville, okay? And then a bye before Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
How many iterations would it take for, like, if they played the season 100 times,
right,
how many of those times does Wake start 6-0 with that opening? 9? 17?
33%.
33 times.
Yeah.
So 1 in 3 seasons that Wake Forest, if there are 3 identical universes, including the one that we are presumably broadcasting in right now, in one of those universes, we're dealing with a top 20 Wake Forest come mid-October.
Yes.
Wow. And then it should be said, Florida State, NC State, Virginia Tech on the road, Clemson on the road, Duke, okay, at Syracuse in the Dome.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Wow. I would say it's more like 11 out of 100.
Oh, ye of little faith. This is a good team.
Okay.
It's not a bad team. Final question.
I mean, Jordan Love is very good, so that might end before September, but okay.
Final question, Dan. Go ahead.
All right. Do I have one more question?
You have one more question here. Then we've made it through all of our ACC teams.
We're already through everything?
Everything.
Okay, we're ending with the ACC's one true team.
That's right.
Your coastal champion, Pitt Panthers.
The Pitt Panthers, 7-5 last year regular season.
7-5. Just murdered in some of their losses.
Finished 7-7.
Yeah.
After the loss to Clemson and then again in the bowl game.
Yeah, who did they lose to? Stanford, I believe.
Yeah. Stanford.
You were saying something. Can I ask my question?
I was going to say, what is your specific question? I have many thoughts on Pitt.
Okay, so they technically played more games. And I was looking at Bill C's numbers. where their offensive or defensive percentile was like under 15%. So they were playing, you know, 15% of what they should be capable of, considering what their performance is. That's awful. That's atrocious that they were that bad so often on one side of the ball. Do you have hope in your heart that Pat Narduzzi and Pitt can normalize into, I don't know, consistently not bad overall as they, you know, it's Kenny Pickett is back. They lose two running backs, but as they sort of remake their offense.
I have hope.
Okay, explain.
I don't have confidence.
Well, what's the difference?
The difference is I want it to happen versus I don't think it will.
Okay, okay. Heart versus head.
Up front, the O-line loses four starters.
Mm-hmm.
The backfield loses both Quadri Allison and Darren Hall, both of whom went over 1,000 yards, combined for 21 rushing touchdowns.
Quadri.
That's putting a lot of pressure on Kenny Pickett. Mm-hmm. And, to be fair, on the new offensive coordinator, Mark Whipple.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, there's talent on the top line. It gets shallow in a hurry.
Your voice is going up. Your voice is going up.
I know. I know. And yeah. I think they're in a lot of close games this year. Again, recurring theme around the ACC. The margin is razor thin here.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think I'm saying is, if I am forced to pick, if I am forced to put my confidence behind any scenario,
mm-hmm.
I'd put more money on it all falling apart than on both sides of the ball rising up to make this an average team across the board. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think there's greater potential.
But...
yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm not rooting against Pitt. I'm not.
Right.
And I know we've had fun with Pitt and we've talked about the offense.
Secretly
and people have
decent,
written in and they've gotten upset about that. I have no issues with Pitt. I'm rooting for Pitt.
Yeah.
But I think the way that this is constructed, especially up front, especially losing the backfield, especially with Kenny Pickett, who I'm not terribly confident in, I have a greater degree of confidence in it all sort of falling apart than all of it collectively getting better.
Their final three games of 2018, Miami on the road, Clemson in the ACC championship game, Stanford in the Sun. It's Stanford. It must be Sun Bowl. Two combined touchdowns in those three games. They ended the year not enthusiastically playing football on offense. 24-3 Miami, 42-10 Clemson, 14-13 Stanford. So at least that was a game. Kenny Pickett against Clemson threw not five, not six, not seven, but for eight total yards against the one big measuring stick in the conference. That worries me.
It is a little worrisome.
That worries me. 8 yards in a big game. So I know the weather was weird, but that's not okay. That doesn't fill me with confidence. So I think Pitt is going to have not a great year.
But the thing
I'm
is,
I'm not feeling good about Pitt at all.
I'm not either.
Coastal champ, 2018.
The Coastal champ.
Right.
And Pat Narduzzi is just so tough to put a finger on. And maybe this whole thing with Mark Whipple will work out. Maybe he'll find some way to reinvigorate the offense. I don't know. He's got a reputation. He's got a good reputation around college football. Maybe he can be the guy who breathes some new life into the situation now. But they're going to have to come up with something in a hurry here. They really are. Again, a ton of production walking out the door. And I'm just not confident that the solutions are there. That's where I'm at.
I mean, that's all reasonable, but last year, Pitt's offense with, I think, two backs that went over 1,000 yards, right?
Yes.
Allison and Darren Hall?
Yes.
They finished, and I know you questioned the science, Ty. You are a Danalytics truther. They finished 84th in the country in points per drive, excluding garbage time, with maybe the best combination or second best combination of backs in the conference. They finished 80th in defensive points per drive allowed, winning the Coastal, mind you, through. I mean, this is also a team that played UCF and Penn State. So this was a Penn State team that got it together in the second half of that game, and UCF, which was enormous all season on offense when Mackenzie Milton was healthy, especially. I am worried that Pat Narduzzi is not that good. despite some of the results, despite beating Clemson, which now looks like, wow, what a hire. And wow, Matt Canada is not somebody with a job. And we talked about this on Twitter. It's like 58th, 84th, and 86th when Matt Canada is not in Pittsburgh. When he is, 10th with Nate Peterman. It's such a weird career that Pat Narduzzi has had in Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be like a 4-8 year for them.
All right, there you go. We've covered all 14 teams in the ACC. Felt good to get this one under the belt. A little rusty.
I felt very good about this show.
A little rusty. I feel good about the show, too.
Yeah.
Feel a little rusty. I'm sure there are things that we left out.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to put out this call because I always get stuff that I missed or left out or screwed up. Sort of the nature of the beast. But write in, solidverbal@gmail.com. Book us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Go on the sub.
Yep.
Talk to other folks. Let us know what we glossed over, what we missed, or where you agreed. We always welcome feedback.
And make sure you drink a bunch of water.
Make sure you drink a bunch of water.
Not too much water, but make sure you stay on top of your hydration.
Do we have any official predictions for this conference?
Oh, I mean, basically, it's just the only thing is who does Clemson play, I guess, in the championship game?
Yeah.
So who is it? Mr. Coastal.
Mr. Coastal, huh? I'm tempted to say Miami.
Okay.
I'm very tempted to say Miami. For me, it's between Virginia and Miami. And I'm going to go with the Canes. I think they are in line for a pretty big first year under Manny Diaz. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't really question that. I don't think it's Georgia. Just eliminating teams. I think Duke, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, Pitt, and probably Virginia Tech are out of it already.
I think Virginia Tech could. You can make a case for Virginia Tech. I do. Well, I mean, I think they've got continuity, and I think they can only get better on defense.
Yeah.
So I feel better about Virginia Tech than maybe I let on. But
Ty, I've had continuity with my body for 36 years, and I still can't dunk. It's still not happening.
I'm going to go Miami, Virginia, Virginia Tech in that order at the top three. Top three of the Coastal.
All right. I think I agree. I think it's Miami or Virginia. I think I'm going to... Where's that game this year? I think that'll decide it. Whoever's playing at home, I'm just going to award the Coastal to right now.
The game is at Miami.
The game's at Miami. All right. Give me the Canes. And the hopefully not too much product in Manny Diaz's hair.
All right. Well...
That's it.
Write in. One more time, solidverbal@gmail.com. Let us know what's on your mind. We'll be back next week. Talk about a different conference. Won't give too much away. I say that because we honestly have not figured out which conference we'll be talking about a week from tonight.
We forgot to mention the Patriot League connection that we promised.
Oh, right. Louisville.
Louisville. Is it TJ Knoll?
Yes.
TJ Knoll is the linebacker. Gosh, he's not coming up on Google, so I feel like I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. But there is a Colgate linebacker, not just a Colgate linebacker, but I think it was FCS All-Star, All-American. And let me get this. Colgate linebacker, Louisville. I'm so ashamed. Yeah, TJ Hull, not TJ Knoll.
Okay.
H-O-L-L. He was Patriot League Defensive Player of the Year. We saw him play in Fargo, North Dakota. He is now playing for Louisville. So that big stanky Drummond Fife travels to fine state of Kentucky in the ACC Fat Atlantic. So that's something. That's fun.
Beautiful.
Okay, that's it.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening. You know how to find us. Don't forget to get those tickets if you are ever so inclined to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Come on out.
17th, we got tickets available, solidverbaltickets.com/Texas. And if you're going to be in D.C., in that metro area, the very next night on the 18th of August, it's a Sunday, 7:30, the show starts, solidverbaltickets.com/D.C. If you're interested. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand. Longer show. Catch your breath. We'll be back in a week.
Love it.
In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week, all of your weekend, and stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.